Ever found yourself wondering how those pristine roads and, landscaping in private communities actually get funded, and what the legal line is between something benefiting just a select few and serving a broader public purpose?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question.
Today, we're plunging into a really fascinating Florida Supreme Court case, Northern Palm Beach County Water Control District Z State. Think of it as a deep dive into how infrastructure gets financed, the, surprising power of legislative decisions, and the sometimes blurry boundaries of what actually counts as a public benefit.
That's right. This isn't just some obscure legal footnote. This case really gets to the heart of how local governments and private developments interact financially. We're talking about the nuts and bolts of funding community improvements and this, fundamental tension between what truly serves the public good and what primarily advantages private interests. Understanding this case gives you a really valuable lens into the legal framework that shapes the places we live.
Exactly. So our mission today is pretty straightforward. We're going to unpack the core of this legal battle, figure out the key questions the Florida Supreme Court was grappling with, and shed some light on the sometimes unexpected ways Florida law defines public purpose when it comes to validating these kinds of bonds.
Okay.
And for this deep dive, we're drawing on a detailed case brief, a standard legal brief, and some background material we put together.
Seems good. So let's set the stage a bit. The situation that brought this case to the courts, we're looking at the Northern Palm Beach County Water Control District, and they had this plan to issue what are called special obligation bonds. Now, these are a bit different from your standard, government-backed bonds.
Precisely. The money they were aiming to raise was specifically intended for road and landscaping upgrades within a specific section, Unit 31 of Ballin Isles, which is a private country club.
Right, gated community.
And here's a really critical detail. These bonds were structured to be repaid solely through assessments on the property owners within Unit 31. So no reliance on public tax revenue and no financial risk to the Water Control District's general funds. The financial burden was, entirely on those specific property owners.
And that lack of public financial risk becomes a really significant thread throughout the court's reasoning later on. But initially, the trial court actually threw a wrench in the works. They rejected the validation of these bonds. They had concerns about whether these improvements, inside a private club truly served a legitimate public purpose. They also cited issues related to something called the Safe Neighborhoods Act. So right from the start, you see this conflict, a local district trying to fund infrastructure in a private setting, and the court's asking, hey, does this really align with the concept of public benefit?
Which brings us right to the crux of the legal matter. What were the big legal questions the Florida Supreme Court had to tackle when this case, landed before them?
Well, the fundamental questions really boil down to two main points. First, did these road and landscaping improvements within a private gated community like Ballin Isles meet the definition of a valid public purpose under the Florida Constitution? That's a common law question about the limits of governmental authority and what we consider a benefit to the public at large.
Makes sense. And the second part of their inquiry.
The second key question was whether the Water Control District had actually followed all the correct state laws in setting up these bonds. Were they in compliance with their governing statutes, or was this, as maybe some might argue, a way to indirectly subsidize a private club under the guise of a public project?
Okay, so the Supreme Court reviewed all this,
Yeah.
and ultimately, they reversed the lower court's decision. They validated the bonds. Let's delve into their reasoning. What were the key arguments that convinced the majority?
Well, one of the most influential factors in the court's decision was a 1991 legislative amendment. This amendment explicitly declared that infrastructure improvements like these, when part of a water management plan, were considered to serve a public purpose. The court essentially gave significant weight to this legislative declaration. They operated under the presumption that the legislature's pronouncements are valid unless there's a, compelling reason to believe otherwise.
The legislature's intention really carried a lot of weight here.
Absolutely. And here's where it gets really interesting. The court drew a distinction between public ownership and public access.
Okay.
Even though access to these roads within Ballan Isles was restricted to residents and their guests because it's private, the Water Control District itself retained legal ownership of the roads. The court reasoned that this public ownership, even with limited access, contributed to satisfying the public ownership aspect that supports a finding of public purpose. Now, that might sound a bit unexpected at first glance.
It does, yeah. You intuitively think that public purpose would mean the public can, you know, generally use it.
Exactly. But the court pointed to some precedent-setting cases like State v. Housing Finance Authority and Nora v. Brevard County Education Facilities Authority. In those cases, a crucial factor in upholding constitutionality was the absence of financial risk to public funds or public credit.
Right, which we mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Here, because the bonds were solely funded by assessments on the Unit 31 landowners, that element of public financial risk was absent. And that further bolstered the court's conclusion. It sort of makes you wonder to what extent the lack of public financial risk paved the way for a broader interpretation of public purpose in this specific context.
Interesting point. And what about that Safe Neighborhoods Act argument that the lower court had brought up?
Yeah.
How did the Supreme Court deal with that?
They essentially stated that the 1991 legislative amendment we just discussed had clarified the law to such a degree that the Safe Neighborhoods Act argument became irrelevant, basically moot. The legislature had specifically addressed this type of situation in their amendment, effectively making those earlier concerns, well, not applicable anymore. This really highlights the power of legislative action to shape the legal landscape.
That's a pretty significant takeaway. The ability of legislative amendments to clarify or maybe even retroactively validate certain types of projects.
It is. And finally, the court addressed the difference between special assessments and taxes. They emphasized that the charges levied on the Unit 31 landowners were special assessments,
right,
meaning they were directly tied to a specific benefit those landowners received, in this case, you know, drainage and access via these new roads. This is distinct from general taxes, which are for the overall welfare of the public.
Got it.
The court found that these special assessments were appropriately linked to a tangible benefit for the assessed properties.
So the majority opinion really seems to hinge on this combination of legislative intent, the technicality of public ownership, the absence of public financial risk, and the specific nature of those special assessments. But as is often the case in big legal battles, there were dissenting voices, right?
Oh, definitely.
Let's explore those counterarguments.
Yes, we had dissenting opinions from Chief Justice Shaw and Justice McDonald, and they raised some really critical points that underscore the inherent complexities of this whole issue. Chief Justice Shaw, for instance, specifically questioned whether the landscaping, he even mentioned the Caribbean island landscaping, truly served any genuine public interest.
Right, like fancy landscaping in a private club.
Exactly. His argument was that simply labeling something as serving a public purpose through legislation doesn't automatically make it so, especially when the primary benefits are clearly accruing to a private entity. It makes you think about the extent to which a legislative body can truly define a concept like public purpose versus a court's role in interpreting its, you know, inherent meaning.
He seemed to be challenging the very substance of the claimed public purpose. Not just the label it was given by the legislature.
Precisely. He felt that in this particular case, the benefit was overwhelmingly private, you know, enhancing the aesthetic appeal and potentially the property values within a private country club with very little tangible benefit for the broader public. Then you had Justice McDonald's dissent. His focus was really on the physical exclusivity of Ballan Isles, the security gates, the restricted access. He argued that these factors essentially negated any real public purpose, regardless of who technically held the title to the roads.
So he was looking at the practical reality.
Exactly. His point about the practical limitations of public ownership when the public is effectively excluded is really compelling. He questioned the significance of public ownership as a determining factor when the public is, in reality, barred from accessing the infrastructure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Both dissenting opinions serve as a crucial reminder that courts won't necessarily just, you know, rubber stamp a public purpose designation if the practical realities suggest otherwise. It makes you wonder if the majority's emphasis on legislative intent and public ownership might inadvertently create a loophole where public ownership on paper doesn't translate to actual public benefit on the ground.
So taking a step back from the specifics, what are the key takeaways for someone trying to grasp the significance of this case and its broader implications? What should we really remember?
Well, the central ruling really boils down to this. Under Florida law, a clear statement of public purpose from the legislature, coupled with public ownership of the infrastructure, are very strong factors in validating bonds for improvements, even if those improvements are located within a private development.
Especially, it seems, when there's no public money at risk.
Right, especially when there's no financial risk to public funds or credit. That's a huge factor.
But the dissenting justices raise a really important cautionary point, wouldn't you say?
They absolutely do. Their arguments emphasize that courts will still scrutinize the actual benefits of a project. They won't simply accept a public purpose label if the primary benefit clearly flows to a private entity. It serves as a cautionary note about the potential limits of legislative declarations in defining what public purpose really means.
And that distinction between special assessments and general taxes, that seems really crucial to understanding this whole setup.
Absolutely vital. It's critical to remember that special assessments must provide a direct and specific benefit to the property owners being assessed. That's different from general taxes, which support a much wider range of public services. This case really reinforces that direct link between the assessment and the tangible benefit received by those paying it.
And the impact of that 1991 legislative amendment really underscores the significant power that legislatures have to, well, shape and even reshape the legal landscape surrounding these types of issues.
Precisely. It demonstrates how legislative action can clarify ambiguities in the law and even potentially validate projects that might have faced challenges under previous legal interpretations. It's quite powerful.
So this case provides us with a framework for understanding how infrastructure in private communities can be financed, but it also brings up some really thought-provoking questions about what truly constitutes a public benefit in these scenarios. It's not always clear-cut.
It does indeed. And on that note, here's maybe a final thought for you to consider. While this case establishes a legal framework, where do you draw the line, between a legitimate public purpose that incidentally benefits private interests and a project that is fundamentally private but just carries a public label? How might this balancing act influence the future development of our communities and the way infrastructure gets funded here in Florida and perhaps even elsewhere? It's certainly food for thought as you observe the development happening around you.
Absolutely. If you're interested in delving deeper into these concepts, public purpose, bond financing, local government law, this case is a really insightful starting point. Consider how these legal principles might apply in your own communities or even, in your future legal endeavors. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.
My pleasure. It was a fascinating case to unpack.